How do you build a high-performance team? That's the question that all leaders grapple with. The challenge in today's environment is that you're told to pull this off on a shoestring budget and that you have to exceed previous year's production. It's an impossible task. Here's how this show helps. Every week, we're going to feature executive and senior leaders from HR, IT, and sales, and they're going to share their best practices and playbooks so you can empower your managers to build great teams. We are Engaging Leadership, and now, here's the show. Thanks for joining us today. This is your friendly neighborhood talent strategy nerd, Dr. Jim. I am recording live from HR Transform 2024 in the Wynn Resorts in Las Vegas. And today we are going to tackle a really important issue, and that is getting your people ready to leave. Joining us today, we have Tony Jamis, who is the CEO of Oyster, as the featured guest. Tony, welcome to the show.
Dr. Jim, thank you for having me.
Super excited to have you on the show. And I think it's going to be important for us to set up a little context. You've got a unique background and perspective in the world of HR tech, in the world of B2B tech. So I'd like you to share with the audience a little bit of your story and what you're working on now, and then we'll dive into the conversation.
Absolutely. So I'm originally from Lebanon. I had to leave my home country when I was a teenager to France for a better economical future. I studied computer science, and 13 years ago from the Bay Area in California and London, I started my first hyper-growth technology company. It was an API business that went public, was acquired, and that enabled me to take a step back. I was in my mid to late 30s and decide, hey, I want to start a new business. By this time, it had to be a mission-driven business, a business that I believe in. So that led me to start Oyster, a global employment platform that is on a mission to make the world more free and equal by democratizing access to global job opportunities.
I want to dig in a little bit on the immigrant background because I'm an immigrant as well. I'm originally from India, but what caught my attention is you went from Lebanon to France, right? And then you spent some time in London. So let's talk sports a little bit. So when you look at France, when you look at England, do you have any favorite soccer clubs that you've identified? Because choose carefully. If I don't like your answer, interview's over.
You're going to like my answer. I have none. I have none because I'm from nowhere. I don't have any national attachment anymore. My home country is a failed state right now. There's no much sports happening there. Maybe it's a blessing that I don't need to watch. I don't have to watch these sports. I can do something else in my life. But I'm pretty agnostic of these teams.
I can live with that answer. If you had said Liverpool or Manchester United, we would have had problems. But I do want to double click on something. So you have a unique perspective as an immigrant and a global immigrant going across multiple countries. How did that shape your talent strategy when you're building these organizations and you've done multiple exits? So tell me a little bit about how that shaped how you built organizations and what your talent strategy involved.
So my core belief is that great talent can be anywhere. So in both of my companies, especially this one, Oyster, we hire people from all over the world. At Oyster, we are 500 people distributed in 70 countries from over 100 nationalities, gender equal across the board. So we're very intentional in building a hyper-diverse organization that is fully distributed.
There's something really interesting about the organizational structure that you just mentioned. You're global in terms of footprint. You have great representation across the organization. What I'm curious about is when you're looking at building an organization like that, there's a lot of cultural differences across borders. So how did you come up with a unified perspective on what diversity means, what it looks like, how it shows up in the organization?
Well, the advantage of when you are fully distributed around the world is that there's no dominant culture. So by design, everybody feels that they are included. So that's what's the beauty of building a hyper-diverse, fully distributed, hyper-distributed organization. I always say it's a planetary level diversity. So essentially we're looking at humans as humans. We don't see their background. And actually with remote work, because remote work is mostly asynchronous work, people that used to be discriminated in the workplace, such as people of color, let's say, they feel so much more at ease in this environment.
That's a really great point. When I think about organizational structure and how you build an organization, there's something that other people have said, a lot smarter than me. There isn't a shortage of talent. There's a shortage of opportunity and access to those opportunities. So that's the issue that organizations need to solve. And you could choose to solve it by taking a zoom out philosophy and looking at, hey, how can we tap into all this great talent around the world, or you can make the decision to be hyper local each has its trade-off. It's just a matter of what you are willing to deal with from an organizational structure perspective. Great stuff so far. I think it set the stage pretty well for the next part of what I want to talk to you about. When you look at a globally distributed remote team and you're thinking about building the next generation of leaders, what are your best practices in identifying that next generation, but more importantly, getting them ready to lead?
Yeah. So when you think about readiness for leadership, you have certain skills that the person has to say in terms of how to manage people, how to give feedback, how to set goals, how to take care of the people. What I find is missing a lot in many organizations is the empathy of the leader. How do you enable leaders to be more empathic to their teams? How do you enable them to feel more what's going on, sense the group dynamics, connect at a deeper level with their team, understand their challenges, and make them feel seen and heard? That's a skill that can be built. And it can be built by enabling the person to connect with themselves. The more they are in touch with their own feelings, they can be much more sensitive to what's going on around them. So it's a skill that can be built by enhancing the emotional sensitivity of the leader.
So I understand what you're saying, certainly from a theoretical perspective. And I'm thinking about this from your perspective as the leader of a global organization with multiple cultures that are represented. Some of the things that you're saying aren't natural from a cultural competency perspective for certain cultures. How did you get over that hurdle and build a unified sense of empathy, caring across your leadership tier that helped build that leadership pipeline?
Yeah. So it started with the top, right? I work on myself as a leader of this organization. I care about how my team feel working with me. And I care about how I feel working here. I don't want to feel judged. I don't want to feel that fear that I'm making a mistake. I want to feel that I can be vulnerable in this organization and not be, I don't want to be afraid to be vulnerable. So first I modeled the behavior myself with my team, and I hire people that are also on that path of being more conscious and empathic leader. Now, obviously it depends on, like, leaders also have to develop the ability to be flexible in terms of what persona they decide to use in what context. So let's say if you are dealing with how to respond in a crisis mode to a competitor, maybe it's less about empathy and more about actions and speed. But if you're dealing with an internal people issue, then you want to be more about empathic and about really being caring and listening to your team.
There's a lot of good stuff in what you just said. I want to expand a little bit and get your thoughts on something. When you're talking about all of this stuff from an executive perspective, other executives get that. One of the major gaps that exists within organizations is when you think about strategy at the C-suite in the boardroom, and you connect it to the line level employee and the day-to-day work, oftentimes a lot of line level employees will have no idea about how this work connects to the broader strategy. What does my role do to impact the company? You spent a lot of time talking about connecting with yourself, understanding yourself, developing yourself, connecting with empathy, all of that sort of thing. What role does the organizational mission of Oyster play in helping connect the dots to that line level person that is doing really granular work?
Absolutely. And it's actually the role of the leadership to create that connection and that relationship. So let me give you examples of how we create Oyster. First, we spend a lot of effort in designing our objective and key result process that connects the individual result to the team result to the company result. So we create this connection so people can understand every action they take has an impact on our overall company results. Also, what you do through leadership communication, I call it storytelling. It's about connecting the company strategy with the day-to-day work of people and explaining to them and repeating the strategy to the team and make sure that everybody understands it.
Great stuff. One of the things that I'm curious about, this sounds excellent on paper, and there's a lot of organizations that are pulling this off successfully. If there's somebody that's listening to this conversation and wants to build an organization like what you're describing and what you've done several times over, what's the key pitfall that they need to watch out for that'll get in the way and prevent them from being able to bring this to life?
The key pitfall I found that people miss is their attachment to their title or to their role or what they need to do. Because as you become a leader in the organization, especially on a C-level leader, you're going to wear multiple hats and you're going to need to have ego flexibility to stay flexible. So for instance, if you, like last time I ended up in a meeting And there was a decision that needed to be made. And I thought that this was not the CEO's job to make that decision. But in a microsecond, I was able to realize that actually my team wants me to make that decision. They need me to make that decision. So I decided to make that decision without reacting, without that ego flexibility gives me a superpower to be this leader that goes with the flow and be able to stay open and curious to what's happening in the organization.
The one thing that I draw from the example that you gave is that it's critical for leaders to listen first and really watch what's going on around them so that they can take the appropriate action. Sometimes that means you're going to let the team take the ball and run. Other times it means that you have to take the ball and run. So really great stuff.
Yes, you have to read the group dynamic.
Tony, if people want to continue this conversation, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
They can follow me on LinkedIn.
Thanks for hanging out with us, Tony. It was a really fast-paced and important conversation that I think is going to help a lot of the listeners out there who are looking at building high-performance teams. When I reflect on the things that we talked about, and we covered a lot of ground, I think one of the things that is really important to highlight is the value of being deeply connected to your mission and then communicating how that mission shows up in the day-to-day work everybody is doing. That is a massive gap that exists within a lot of organizations. And if you're looking at building a leadership pipeline, developing the next generation of leaders, you have to be deeply connected to the why of your organization, so that you're identifying people who are ready to lead for the right reasons. And that's what I took away from this conversation that we had. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. For those of you who have checked out the conversation, if you liked it, leave us a review. If you haven't already done so, join the HR Impact community. You can find that at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And tune in next time where we'll have another great leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that help them build a high-performing team. Thanks for listening to this episode of Engaging Leadership. We hope you liked the conversation. Don't forget to continue supporting us by joining the HR Impact community. You can find our community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time where we'll have another leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that help them build high-performing teams.